I think the key to being successful in whatever you do, whether you're a grocery store clerk or a professional baseball player, is you've got to be good at it. You've got to be passionate about it, and you got to be able to make money doing it. And if you can find something in the middle of those three things, you're going to be successful, right?
Constructing your life is about much more than just building a bank account. Each week, join mindset coach Austin Linney as he interviews guests who are constructing their dream lives and impacting the world around them on a daily basis. If you're an entrepreneur or wanting to start a business, or you just want to hear motivating stories of how others have overcome the odds, you are in the right place. And now for your host, Austin Linney.
Guys, welcome back to Construct Your Life. Dude, you know what? It's very rare that I have royalty on the podcast, but I have X, Twitter, whatever you want to call about it. He's so famous. We got the man, Eric, in the house. How are you doing, sir?
Wow, what an introduction, Austin. First of all, not factually accurate, but I'll take the ego boost anytime I can get it, man. So great to see you. Thanks for having me here.
You know, you're a man of many talents. I know a little bit about your story. I don't know much about it, but why don't you kind of start me in the beginning, kind of how you got to your own law firm and all that kind of stuff like that, and we'll just start from there.
Yeah, I'll give you the high level, and if there's anything specifically you want me to talk about more, happy to drill down. But corporate lawyer, started my my career, left Duke Law School and went to Texas and spent a number of years with large law firms down there. Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, primarily a really good group of lawyers, Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, and then had a brief layover in Denver, Colorado. And then in 2022, I have to look at the calendar because 2024 things throwing me off. We launched a law firm called SMB Law Group. It's a small business focused law firm. We primarily represent business buyers from the search fund, entrepreneurship through acquisition, or business buying communities. Yeah, the story is quite interesting, though, how we launched the firm, and you know, happy to talk about that if that's where you want to go.
Yeah, well, we're going to dive into that, only because I'm in the midst of it, and I have some things in my past. You know, I always tell this story. I've never told you this story, but this is the craziest story of my life because it was real life watching how the world works. So I had got in trouble with alcohol driving in Austin. This was back in the day. And the law firm I went to, they were backed up for almost 3.5 years. Austin court system was. He said, "Look, dude," he said, "just keep extending until they get tired of you and they'll kick it out." Right. Like, that's what he literally told me. Like, you know, I didn't have much money.
First of all, has the statute of limitations run on this, Austin, before we go to?
Yeah, we're good. Okay. We're good.
All
we're
right.
good.
All right. Good. Good.
Yeah. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Yeah.
For sure.
Bill me later. So, yes, long time ago. So long story short, my first day in court, it's a big court. There's multiple courts. There's so many people in there. And I'm sitting there, and I'm my lawyer is useless. I mean, does not care. He's probably got, you know, 150 clients. But I watched the defense attorneys, the state representatives, walk out, and they looked. They had shitty suits. They looked like they just got out of college. And then I watched the lawyers that represented the clients walk in brand new cowboy boots, $10,000 suits, and he walked right up to the judge and goes, "Hey, judge, great to see you out on the golf course yesterday, man. It was so awesome. You think we can get this case knocked out of here?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm sure we can wrap it up quick." And I sit there and I go, "Oh, okay. This world we live in is a relationship business, and you can tell who's got, whether it was right or not, had the money, didn't have the money, had the pool, didn't have the pool." Did you ever have that moment when you were a young lawyer when you got into court?
No, so I'm a transactional guy. So I've been to court twice in my life. One was pretend in law school, and then one was helping a little boy get adopted. And I had, you know, I was so nervous. I had a piece of paper, Austin, and it was, you know, shaking in front of me as I was reading. So I'm not your guy if you're going to go to court.
Yeah, sure.
And so, you know, fun anecdotes about, you know, unequal access to justice and things like that are kind of outside my wheelhouse. I've always represented companies in transactions. So if you want to, you know, primarily mergers and acquisitions, but oftentimes capital markets transactions too, if they're going to sell debt or equity, that's where I was, you know, kind of helping add a basis point to the share price, whatever. It's what we were doing. So less fun.
Guys, let me take a minute to tell you about my buddies over at LeadHub, Ben and Aaron, the best humans I know. Not only are they amazing at marketing for trade companies, but Ben started his HVAC company in his garage, sold it for multi-million dollars. So when this guy talks, I listen. When we took over Dietz Mechanical, we had 22 reviews in 22 years and 7 short months. We went from 22 reviews to 107. We went from a 4.2 to a 4.7. We tripled our Facebook presence and we tripled our calls. If you're an HVAC, plumbing, electric, landscaping company, and you're looking for a no BS approach to marketing, you're looking for people who have done it before, you got to go to leadhub.net.
So how did the group come together? Because I'll be frank, if you stack you all next to each other, it looks like an amazing group of people, and I love everybody, but it doesn't, if on the surface, it doesn't look like everybody fits.
Within our firm?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
It seems like you found the best pieces of each of y'all.
Yeah.
And you put it together and it's made a great company. Is what I mean is like y'all come from different kind of backgrounds.
We do. We all have our own little, you know, if you want to talk about building a business and traction EOS, we all kind of have our own. And it was a lot of serendipity. I don't know that we're lawyers. We're not great business people. We're really good at the law, I think. Mm-hmm. We're really good at transactions, but, you know, I don't think we're necessarily the world's greatest entrepreneurs.
Somebody else. So I'm not going to let you say, I'll say it. That's a lie. Okay. First of all, you know how to create a business, you know how to create attention, and you know how to care for your clients. The rest of the stuff will figure it out for itself. Because every time I've met you, your attention to detail, to listening to people and being available for them is second to none. So I will not let you say that you're not great at business. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, I think honestly, Austin, for me, I think the key to being successful in whatever you do, whether you're a grocery store clerk or a professional baseball player, is you've got to be good at it. You've got to be passionate about it, and you got to be able to make money doing it. And if you can find something in the middle of those three things, you're going to be successful. Right. And for me, I've always been, I think I'm a good transactional attorney, but when I was working in corporate and prior to starting S&B Law Group, you know, I was working for Kirkland & Ellis was my last law firm, one of the best private equity law firms on the planet, doing $100 million, billion-dollar transactions. They're very aggressive. They do probably more private equity or as much private equity as anybody, probably, you know, more private equity than a large cohort of the 100 largest firms put together. They do a ton of private equity. And they're going after targets on Sunday night at 11 p.m. We're on a call, Distress Energy Company, California. How are we going to take it down? That did not excite me, Austin, if I'm being honest. It wasn't for me. I don't know that it's for any. I don't know if anybody's like, oh, I'm so passionate about, you know, private equity M&A and, you know, large cap companies doing KKR, taking down this entity or that entity. What happened in the genesis for the firms, I started networking in the entrepreneurship through acquisition community, the business buying community, because I loved it. I loved the idea of people going out and taking control of their life by buying an established, you know, high quality, enduringly profitable business. And, you know, how exciting that is for and what it can do for your life if it's done the right way. You know, there are a lot of ways to screw it up, but if it's done the right way, I think it's an incredible thing. I think it's the best possible way to be an entrepreneur, in my opinion. So I was networking in that space because I was going to go buy a business. That was my thought, at least. And I had a ton of people start coming to me going, hey, I need a really high quality lawyer for my $10 million deal. I had no idea at that time that lawyers don't really exist in that space. You've got, you know, mid-market M&A attorneys that are built for $50-100 million deals that don't really make sense doing those deals. And then you've got generalist attorneys that are like, hey, I'm Carl, I'll take anything, but I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not going to tell you that. And you're going to get your ass kicked in the transaction, but I'm going to take my fee and I don't care. You know, so you're really kind of sandwiched between those two things. And obviously that's a little you know, hyperbolic, but so we wanted to build something specifically for the small business buyer. And we all are incredibly passionate within our group about this cohort of people. I mean, love the person, because by and large, the person that's doing it is, you know, there's a certain caste type, and obviously there's, a lot of different people, but primarily they look a lot like you and I. They're 25 to 45 year old guys and gals that have a family, have done something in corporate, and they want something different for their life. They want to have that control. They want to be able to be at their kid's soccer game at Thursday at 2 o'clock, but, you know, also work hard, have unlimited upside, but also just own it, right? They just want to have some freaking control, you know. And if I make a dollar, I keep a dollar, as opposed to going to corporate, I make a dollar and I keep 10 cents, you know? And so those are people that I really identify with, because that's who I am as a person as well. And then the work I really identify with as well, because I love the nuts and bolts of it. So we all share that within our firm. You know, the people that I brought on, Kevin Henderson, who is an incredible transactional lawyer, helped me found this. Couldn't run this without Kevin. Kevin is an entrepreneur. He's salt of the earth. Same thing with Sam Rosati. Sam is a lawyer by training. He actually quit the law. He did what I was thinking about doing, quit the law, bought a business, had an exit. And then we said, okay, we need Sam because of his Main Street experience to kind of help us bridge the gap between really knowing M&A and really knowing SBA, Main Street M&A. And then we've added incredible people throughout our firm that all have that same ethos. You know, Ellie Albrecht, just an incredible family guy. He's been in the Wall Street Journal. When he was at Gibson Dunn, they wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal about him as a law dad, as a father that's trying to be at home, trying to have that relationship with his family, but also be a, you know, successful corporate lawyer. You know, Laura Giesecke, who, you know, she joined our firm. Part of her story was, you know, she wanted to move to a place in South Carolina, be closer to family. And in traditional corporate environments, you can't really do that. So we were able to help her do that through remote work and the like. And it's throughout our entire firm, our whole group, we really identify with the client and we really love the work. And when you do that, man, like you're probably talking about, you know, you and I are chopping it up at a pizza place in Columbia, Missouri, middle of nowhere, 150 dudes. We're all the same, you know, we're very different, but we're all the same. And you know, that there's that identification around values. And when you got that, like, I'll hang out with you guys. I'll talk to you guys about transactions at 3 a.m. You know, I love it. So that's us.
As you described the law firm, I think about all those people, cause I follow all of them, and, you know, there's this thing out there, like, do you attract the right people when you know what you're seeking, or like your mission, right? Or like, it just feels like life in general and mindset and business is this big jigsaw puzzle. And when all the timing, because I know we shed some business partners and I brought on some new ones in the last couple months, and when you have that synergy, right, and they all kind of fit together and they all kind of complement each other, but more importantly want to see each other supported within their family and their business, I mean, you want to talk about an unstoppable force. I mean, and that shows that y'all have done, you just posted you did $1 billion in overall volume transaction. And how long did it take?
It took us 18 months to get to over a billion. In 2023, though, we did about 950 million. So we did a lot of deals, man, like somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 transactions. Yeah.
So you sit here today, right? And you were a lawyer and you had this dream. I want to take back control of my life. Like, in all seriousness, like 950 million in 1 year is crazy. That's insane. That's doing great stuff. When you started out, did you like think that it would be like this? Like, seriously, like.
No, we didn't. So Kevin and I were sitting around when we decided to launch this thing, going, what do we want this to be? And do we want to just do a couple deals at a time, sit at our kitchen table, have a better quality life, make a decent living, and then like, go golfing at 2 o'clock, or do we want to try to build a big enterprise? And I think our decision at the time was we don't know, because we don't know what the market's going to give us. And so let's just kind of ride the wave and see what happens. And I didn't know that this would happen necessarily. But you also, Austin, you know, as well as anybody and everybody who's going to listen to this is probably an entrepreneur or has been around entrepreneurs. As you say all that, I still don't feel like it's going that great. You know what I mean? Because, right?
Yeah.
It's a grind every day. Help people. The interesting thing about our firm is we help people buy businesses, because mostly we do some general legal work, but mostly we're helping buy side, you know, small business acquirers. But we are a startup ourselves. We're going from zero to one. I don't know that we would characterize ourselves as it being at one yet. We're up to about maybe 18 or 19 people headcount wise, and we've got, you know, lawyers and we've got support staff, but I don't know when you get to one, but going from zero to anything is incredibly difficult. It is really challenging. And it's life on hard mode. And I think that there are very few people that haven't been in yours or I's seats that really can appreciate how challenging it is to go from zero to one. So I appreciate all the nice things you said, but I still think, especially having had this experience, because sometimes people be like, you're a startup, but you're telling people to buy businesses. I'm a startup, so I can am in a better position to tell people to buy businesses. Yeah. So anyways,
it's been a good ride. I would say the number one thing that has struck me after 12 months of an existing business for starting another one right now, separate more in my zone of genius, which I'll explain to you off air. The energy for a startup and an energy to buy an existing business, let's say it's been around for 20 years, there's two totally different people.
Yeah.
Like who I am in my HVAC company needs to chill the F out and just let the baby hum. And then when it's a startup, it's pound. It's okay. Let's go. Let's push. And I think people don't realize how different that. Look, if you're a single business owner and you start a business and you got two employees, it's way different than having to be 41 years old, which I am, and talk to 65-year-old men who've been in the trade for 45 years and try to tell them how to do their job as an HVAC installer. That's more about trust and kind of getting out of their way, and less about they don't need the rah-rah. And if you give them the rah-rah, they're just going to walk out the door. So it's just, there's so many dynamics when you're buying an existing business. I don't think a lot of people understand that, because they might have started a business, right? But that startup energy never leaves you, no matter if you're in year five or seven. And so that's been the biggest thing for me, is understanding the different dynamics of how you need to show up in those different scenarios.
Right. And you know, somebody said the other day that they wouldn't even characterize acquirers as entrepreneurs. The zero to one guy is the entrepreneur. The acquirer is a business manager, you know.
I never heard that.
I'm a little hesitant to characterize business acquiring as some easy feat. It's not. Mm-hmm. But it's different. It's a different thing. So anyways, it's a bit of an interesting topic.
So I'm listening to this. I'm a business owner, or I've thought about buying a business, right? And I view advice when it comes to CPA, bookkeepers, lawyers, kind of like the health business, you know, the health world. There's so much advice out there. People just go swimming, right? When you look at clients and they're going to buy a business and you're consulting them right out of the gate, what are the one or two things that they're not paying attention to as an acquirer or buyer that they need to make sure that is top of mind when it comes to engaging a lawyer and stuff that they're not paying attention to?
Things that are overlooked. Well, you know, I don't know. It's a really buying a business is a challenging process, right? Because you've got a lot going on. First of all, there's a lot of sales involved. Awesome. You got to convince the seller and the broker you're the guy or gal. You got to convince the bank that you can do it. You've got to convince your spouse. You've got to convince, you know, lots of people. And then when you ultimately acquire the business again, you're convincing that 65-year-old tradesman that you are a person that he should listen to. So it takes an enormous amount of confidence. It also takes an enormous amount of time management, because you've got a lot going on, right? You're negotiating legal documents. You're working with the bank. You're doing quality of earnings. You're maybe working your day job. You're being a mom or a dad. And there's more stuff, right? It's an enormously challenging thing. And there are a lot of off ramps for the wrong people, I believe, in that process. But I think the thing that I see people struggle with, even sophisticated people, and this will maybe sound a little bit self-serving, but I mean it, setting aside my role in things, is when you try to DIY too much with all that you have going on, trying to do, you know, you've been at Goldman Sachs for a decade. Great. And you could do a quality of earnings with your eyes shut. Great. Have you ever done a quality of earnings with a small business HVAC owner who is refusing to give you documents, or, you know, does things on paper or whatever? You know, have you ever done it in this industry? Have you ever thought about working capital for a pool installation business? Have you ever thought, you know, those are the times that I see people get in trouble, is even when it's within their zone of genius, they're a finance expert or finance whiz, but you come into a different dynamic and you are testing out that skill set in a different dynamic at the wrong time to be testing, because things are moving so incredibly fast and you don't want to be 60 to 90 days into the transaction then realizing that, hey, I screwed up by not hiring a quality of earnings provider. I'm going to make a $3, $4 million investment here. And I didn't want to spend 15 grand, a mere drop in the bucket, to make sure that a critical component of the transaction is done the right way. So I don't think that business buying is rocket science, but it's about getting the right pieces lined up, and it's about executing very well and managing time and managing a team within the deal process.
I love that. You're very active on social media, especially on LinkedIn and X. You know, it's an interesting world. It says I've been on Twitter for, you know, years, but really I've only been on it for 12 months because I didn't even do it before then. It was like Spanish to me. But I felt like I found my people. And, you know, kind of, I would love to hear your journey about the platform and kind of like what you found out about it, because I'd just be interested, because I know you now, but I'd be curious to see kind of where you started and how your, what your views are on it.
Well, I think it's evolved tremendously in this period of time. I made my account on August 23rd of 2021. So like pandemic had been going on and it got a little seasoned and I've been watching a lot of things, and I was like, hey, I was bored at, you know, my corporate gig. So I thought, hey, I'll make an anonymous account because I knew going out publicly would have been detrimental to my career, or possibly a career ender. So I went out anonymously. But what I was focused on when I went out on, call it Twitter, I guess we'll call it Twitter and we'll call the new version X, was I had known a lot of the characters. I had been watching their conversations, right? Reg Zeller, you know, Nick Huber, a lot of other people, like, you know, many lurkers out there today. And so my objective when I was thinking about buying a business was I want to get to know these people that are doing all this interesting stuff, because I want to learn from them and whatever. So I had a very targeted focus when I went out. I started tweeting about small business M&A because that was what I had to offer, and getting to know these people and kind of building a lot of relationships. And fortunately, everybody was incredibly welcoming, friendly, supportive. It's a very niche corner of Twitter, all small business, right? For folks that are not on Twitter that are listening to this, they think Twitter, like, why the hell are you on there? It's chaos. It can be. Just like anything else, and I think it's a microcosm of life. If you don't curate your influences, and if you don't curate what you allow yourself to see and who you allow to see you, yes, you will have a lot of terrible things in your life and you'll have a lot of terrible things in your timeline. Twitter was a little bit easy to curate because we had a really good group of small business buyers and operators that were talking about small business buying and operating, and I had nothing else. You know, I didn't have Nancy Pelosi or, you know, Chuck Schumer or any of these people shouting about politics. I didn't have even Elon Musk. I didn't have anybody except these small business buyers and sellers. And so I built a lot of really interesting relationships off platform. I think there's a lot of people that I would consider to be friends. Maybe they would consider to be friends. I don't know. You'll have to ask them. But a lot of people that I would consider to be friends that came from social media. And that's how I was able to get traction at first. Never had a desire to build an audience. That was not my objective. I still don't know that that's necessarily my objective. On a daily basis, when I engage on these platforms, the question I ask myself is, what do I enjoy sharing? What do I think is interesting, funny, whatever, that if I put it out there, what's going to come back, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you put things out there and you get stuff that comes back that you, frankly, you kind of deserve because of what you put out there. So it's been a little bit of an evolution for me as an individual, but also then the platform has evolved tremendously too. I mean, Twitter becomes X, and now X really is it's an attention seeking game. That's all it is. Who can say the most crazy, interesting, funny, novel thing and get the most attention in the process. So it's a little narcissistic, and it's very ego driven in the current platform. But I still enjoy it tremendously. Maybe that says something about me as a person, but I still have a lot of relationships that have come from the platform and people that I interact with. And on a daily basis, it's good for business. We just had a partnership struck up with Mercury Bank that came from a silly TikTok video that I shared of this girl getting fired, and it went to 25 million people. And I get a DM from somebody at Mercury Bank saying, hey, let's start up a partnership with your firm. And the result of it is incredible. They're going to create a, you know, an onboarding process for our clients where you can open a bank account and get $1,000 within an hour for our clients. Nothing in it for us other than just creating a better process for our clients. And that came from the attention that was garnered from a silly TikTok video. So, you know, you got to balance when you're on these social media platforms of how do you have fun with it personally? How do you do it in a constructive way? And then how do you make sure that you're not allowing, you know, negative influences into your life? Because it, you know, it can be an ugly thing.
100%. And I love when businesses, I use Mercury. I love when businesses are quick to see that and then capitalize in the new world. Because I do agree that there's so much opportunity to use it as long as it doesn't use you. And the problem is that I have found, and this is me calling myself out because I've watched it in other people too, a video goes viral for whatever freaking reason, or a post goes viral, and then you're chased seeking that second viral within the next 7 days, and you're like, then you start feeling bad, and it's like, okay, dude, that's not, you know, it's the same thing with the podcast. Like I told my producer, like, never did I think I would have one. Now we're cruising around 600 episodes. I said, what would it look like at 10,000 episodes? And if I just use that as the focus, I have no idea what will happen. And I think that's a better way to use the platforms instead of them using you, which is a daily fight I think a lot of people don't pay attention to.
Yeah. I mean, I to quote the greatest football coach ever, Nick Saban, you know, you don't look at the scoreboard. Right. When you're running your process, like, what is your objective? Mm-hmm. What do you need to do to accomplish that objective? And you don't look at the scoreboard. It's why he's screaming at guys in the fourth quarter and they're up by 80 points because he's not worried about the scoreboard. He's worried about the execution. And this is a little bit of a, you know, this is very different than running a high level college football program, but it's really not. Also, your life, Austin, is designed to do what? What are you trying to accomplish? What are your goals? And how does this fit into those goals? And when you're sharing content, if you're, you know, augmenting what you're doing based on the scoreboard instead of on the, you know, answering the question of, is this moving me towards my objective of either having fun, doing something business-wise, creating relationships, that's the question. And so that's why if you look at my content, there are a lot of people that have big, successful accounts, and they're really careful. You know, they're really guarded. They're really buttoned up. They don't comment on a lot of stuff. They're really very professional about it. I'm not. You know, I try not to say embarrassing things, but I also am there. When I post something, the question is like, am I enjoying myself as I share this, you know? And if I am, and am I, you know, I don't want to embarrass my team and whatnot, but
yeah,
you know, I'm not as,
that's why I think Robert is just a trip, because he's such a good, lighthearted, funny guy. And like to see you and him, like when y'all get in flow, like it's just the best. Right. And I think, you know, for a guy that never, and I'm just saying this to the young people, for a guy who dropped out of college 3 times, and I purposely took about 45 to 60 posts when I joined Twitter for the first time, had my VA type them up in a document, and I hand that out to young people. I truly believe that in those 60 tweets, there are more information than a college MBA could give you. Real life.
Wow. Information. I'd love to see those tweets. That's great.
I'll send it to you. Yeah, it's amazing. And I did the same thing with Hoffman stuff. Like, there's so much value. I hand it to my sales guys. I give it to my team. I share it with my coaching clients.
Yeah.
There's so much value and stuff like that, right? And so information's everywhere when you seek it. So I asked this question this morning. Go ahead before I ask the question. What were you going to say?
No, I think you're right. Please continue. I'll elaborate in a second.
No, go ahead. You're good.
Well, you know, again, it comes back to what you curate here. I mean, we have a high powered machine that's pumping out information. And you know, it depends on who you're following. Right. And I think that's the message to young people is this is a microcosm. Go look at your, you know, son or daughter's TikTok. Just see who they're following, right? Look at the YouTube videos that they're watching. That's who they're going to become. I have a 5-year-old and he's brilliant. I don't say that because I'm his dad. He really is. He's off the charts smart.
Yeah.
And I can watch, you know, if he's watching something on space or numbers, we're talking about that. If he's watching something wild or Mr. Beast or whatever, and they're jumping all over the place, all of a sudden he's jumping all over the place. We don't grow out of that, right? We don't grow out of that. I mean, we tone it down a little bit, but you got to curate your influences. You know, when we had, you know, and this is not a political comment, but Trump was a much more, you know, headline making, you know, outspoken, you know, brash president than Biden. Mm-hmm. And I think our discourse during that period of time, we were watching him every day, was a little more of that. Right. And that's, again, good, bad, whatever. That's not what I'm saying here. I'm just saying we do evolve a little bit to our influences more than we realize.
I'm going to give a real life example to understand. You're hearing me speak right now. You're hearing my voice and you're saying, okay, that guy sounds like he's from wherever. If I get around my grandfather or I get around my uncles who are from Southeast Texas and have been on Gator, the Gator show, you will hear me sound like I just went on a fucking trail for the last 2 hours. Like what we listen to and what we're put around, we walk the same way as the people we're around. We speak the same way. So you have an option to do this thing, and it's amazing, and it's called the mute button. And you can just, you know, what's crazy about social media? This is the craziest thing in the world. This happened to me recently at a bunch, especially Instagram. I'm sitting there arguing about this person and their choices in their life. And my fiance looks at me and she goes, just unfollow them. And then you unfollow them. And then guess what? I don't have that concern anymore. Yeah. It's like, wow, it just went away from your life. It's the craziest thing in the world.
Right. Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. And so the evolution of my account's now up to about 105,000 followers. And when I started, the first, you know, 10,000, the first 9,000, it's pretty good. That's probably the best place to be. It's 9,000 followers. Mm-hmm. You want to sit tight at one spot, it's 9,000. Because at 9,000, you pretty much know everybody you're following. Everybody who's following you pretty much knows you, has good intentions. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go north of that, you're starting to get kind of cross currents, like small business, real estate, for me, law, crypto. Sometimes I've tweeted regrettable things about crypto, and now I've got crypto people following me. I went viral for ChatGPT, so I've got a bunch of AI people following me. And so now all of a sudden I'm at 50, 60,000 followers. And when you're sub 10, somebody trolls you, it hurts. You're like, what the hell? Like, this person said a mean thing. Like, what's the problem? You know, and you want to go after them or block them or whatever. Then you get to about 50, 60,000. And like the number of people that are saying mean, hurtful things to you is so many that, like it still bothers you, but it's only like the really intense things that you'll block out. And then you get up to where I am now. And like, yeah, I don't even see it anymore. And so there's this like maturation, and some people can't handle that, right? Like some people just can't. And sometimes I don't handle it well either. But the evolution for me was going from like the sub 10,000 where I'd like respond to that person, be like, what's your problem? You know, to like the 60,000, be like, I'm going to block these people. Like I'm going to block them. Like they're mean, they're vicious, they have bad intentions. They don't get to deserve to see me. All that does is you're taking an affirmative action that they see that is hostile to them. What do you think that does? You think that makes them like you more?
Yeah.
No, they put it out there that you blocked them, and now it's engendered negativity towards you from everybody who sees that. Because they all do it. They all screenshot it, go, oh, Austin, look at Austin block me. Can't handle it. Couldn't handle the smoke, you know? And then you get to 105. And so now I've got like a pretty much a two, I don't engage with the negativity. If I see it, even if it's somebody I like, they say something negative. You can disagree with me all day long. I'm an attorney. You know, I'm perfectly comfortable with somebody telling me that I'm wrong. But if you disagree with me and like, oh, this, you know, look at this bullshit artist who's blah, blah, blah. I'm gonna see it one time. Right. And if I see it a second time, then I just mute you and I never see you again. And that's the best way to. Yeah. And so that way you kind of do it in a non-hostile way, but you can't interact with that negativity. And there's a lot of it.
And my life lesson to all you people out there is you can use the mute button in real life too, guys. It works the same.
Yeah, you can. You can even mute tweets where there are text messages. You can shut off notifications.
It's an amazing thing. So one last question. I asked this question this morning on another guy I interviewed off the platform, and I loved it. So there are a million hot takes out there. I'm trying to explain to my podcast producer, social media is an interesting place, especially on X and Twitter, where the trends are going. Different week, different thing. What is something out there right now, a narrative that is circulating that you just think is a really bad take?
That's a good question. I think the thing that I struggle with the most is just like and this will be redundant from what we just talked about, but the intensity of the negativity. And I'll give you an example. There's a viral video from the last few days of this man complimenting his wife. And you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. It was hard to watch, but I understand the purpose behind the video.
He's complimenting his wife, right? And, you know, she's wearing an outfit and he says, like, she looks good in the outfit or whatever. It's a little over the top about it. It's obviously a stage video, but like, you're on social media. Like, everything's content, everything's staged, right? And it goes viral because everybody's like, look at how, whatever, this man complimenting his wife, and they're negative about it. And I'm like, guys, like, this dude is complimenting his wife. That's your beef. You've got beef with a man complimenting his wife. Like, that's what we're going to make an issue with today, is he overly complimented his wife. And I see a lot of it, right? Of stuff like that. When you really boil it down, it sounds stupid when you say it like that. Well, I am bothered by this man complimenting his wife. Just keep going, keep scrolling. If something doesn't sit right with you, or you think it's silly, or you think it's staged or whatever, you don't need to turn it into a viral video embarrassing this man who complimented his wife, you know? So you really have to be careful in social media. You get sucked into those negative.
We've created a system where two things are taking place, and it's kind of disheartening, is that everybody needs to fit in a box, number one. The second is that we're not allowed to be happy anymore. And it's exhausting to me that people allow others to speak into their life what they would never accept for themselves. And when you create a space where you and you alone get to dictate how your family and yourself operate, then you can go, okay, great, thank you very much. Like, I tell everybody the same story. I've told it a million times. When I got sober, when I first got sober and started a podcast, I used to get 6 to 7 DMs a week from people that I used to work with over the years. And the DMs went like this. Who the fuck do you think you are? You're a piece of shit. You'll always be a drunk. I don't know how you think you could have a podcast. Go fuck yourself. All the time. This went on for a year and a half.
Sorry,
I'm dead serious.
Go through that, Austin. That's terrible.
Heard about it from other people that had worked there that went. Like, this is what I hear. Okay, then fast forward 2 years, and then I'm getting messaging going, hey, man, really proud of you. Keep it up. Same people. Then in year four, they're asking me to coach them so they could get through addiction and sobriety. And I go, if that's not a metaphor for life, I don't know what is.
Yeah, it's so interesting because we are, like you said, inviting, you know, things that we wouldn't accept for ourselves. We're very hard on other people. We're very two-dimensional. I shared something the other day about a person, I'll say his name, but he had a, you know, very famous festival that had a Netflix documentary.
Yes.
First time, ended up in prison. He's trying to do a second festival. I don't really understand what he's doing. And I tweeted and I said, I really want to like this guy, but I don't understand the business model, you know, $1 million for a ticket. And people were like, why do you want to like this guy? And I replied and I said, I want to like everybody. I want to believe that everybody is good and I want to give everybody a second chance. And the number of comments that I had were under that, like, some people don't deserve a second chance. This wouldn't be a second chance. Yada, yada. It's like, imagine if that was you, man. Like, we all have the propensity to do dumb, stupid things. And I hope that someday I've done things in my life. People have given me second chances, certain things. I will continue to make mistakes and do dumb things in my life. And I hope that when the day comes, that people will give me a second chance, you know? And so, I'm sorry you had to go through that, Austin. That sounds completely unfair.
Hey,
congratulations on the success of the podcast and the perspective and the perseverance, man. So really, you're on a great podcast, Austin.
No, it's all good because what I realized, two things. One, if you are where you are as you sit today, the only person that got you there was you. So the only person that can get you out is you. You have the key to your own freedom, number one. Number two was really what did it for me is I had three guys. I'm dead serious. This is not a joke. Three guys in Arizona when I lived there try to fight me in person. And it was really scary. One guy was really big and it was like, he kicked me out of his house. It was like, I mean, I was torn up. Like, I was like, really, like, I'm not a mean person. I have a little bit of a sassy attitude, but that's okay. I'm a Sagittarius. So, and I called my buddy and I realized what it was. He could not get sober. So he was upset that I was sober and he wanted to bring me down to his level. And when I realized that you can just love somebody and say, I'm sorry that that's hurting you, not take it on for yourself, then you can move on with your day. And I think more people should do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry you had to go through that, though. I mean, the journey of life has many twists and turns. About that age. You're just a little bit ahead of me. You said you're 41.
There'll be many books. There'll be many books. The first one is going to be called My First Year of Entrepreneurship in SBMB World. Who knew that it would be a war, a knife fight, anxiety-ridden journey? I'm really excited to write that one. So if people want to find out more about your company, they want to reach out to you, how would they do that?
Yeah, we're SMB Law Group. We are a law firm that specializes or focuses on small and medium-sized business acquisitions, sub $50 million, but really our bread and butter is $2 to $15 million M&A. We've got a program for Main Street buyers as well. I'm on Twitter at SMB_attorney. Pretty easy, like Deion Sanders says, I'm not hard to find. And our website is SMB Law Group. SMBlaw.group. So reach out anytime. Always happy to help, David.
One of the best lines from Deion Sanders. I ain't hard to find. I love it.
Ain't hard
guys,
to find.
Send this to a friend that'll get some value, and we'll see you next time.